Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime!
Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 107 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuttersincpodcast.com. With me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Tigamuller. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. That one, that little reputation.
That one
doesn't
has to stick.
Well, I don't know. Nobody's, you know, it had its moment among my friends, and then it seems to have died down. So either they all just take it for granted, or you know, or they just don't like it. I don't know. But I'm happy either way. It's a compliment. You know, that's the way I look at it. And you've been well?
I have. Thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, fine. Haven't been out. I've got a lot of photography to do, but I haven't got a lot of haven't done a lot in the last week.
I've got
a wedding, an evening wedding tomorrow night, then another one on Saturday, then another one next Friday, another one next Saturday, and then straight from the wedding next Saturday, I have to go to Kangaroo Island. So basically, I'm driving from the wedding reception to the airport. So during that week, I'll be on Kangaroo Island, and I forgot to tell you, Bruce, I won't be able to do the podcast that week.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Sorry about that, Chief.
That's all right.
But I'll be busy leading a photo tour there. So really looking forward to it. If you're listening, Google Kangaroo Island and have a little bit of a look if you're not familiar with it, if you're not an Australian, because it's a lovely place. And so that's where I'll be, unfortunately. But this past week, I haven't done much at all, just been basically catching up with things that I've got to do.
Right.
So it's been which is, you know, wedding processing, doing getting the magazine together, finally finished, and that kind of. If you've been on my blog, you would have seen the covers. So that's been the nature of my week. But we have a podcast to record and some correspondence to read through. So shall we get on with that, you reckon?
Absolutely.
All right, fantastic. Well, the first one, I don't know, I'm going to read it through because I reckon everyone will get a bit of a kick out of it and may actually agree with it. This is from Mark Loader. Did you get this email?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, this will be interesting for you too, mate. Mark, thank you very much for a very lighthearted email. Hi, Shelton. I've been wanting to email you for some time, but I only went online last week. You will understand the delay. I did send you an SMS once, and you replied to that, so thank you. I'm one of the poor sods who has listened to every podcast twice. Sad, but true. So I actually feel quite close to you and Bruce, in a masculine way, of course, he has in brackets. Thank you, Mark. A friend of mine downloads to my iPod so I can listen to several new episodes at a time. I've always been a sucker for imagery, be it photography, films, or even video games. Check out the ruined city in Gears of War to see what I mean. No thanks, Mark. However, it has only been the last 2 years that I've actually got moving with digital capture. I'm 51, so I decided it was now or never. First it was a Konica Minolta Z6, followed by a Nikon D80. I also got a Nikon S200 compact to basically take everywhere. This was 2 weeks before you recommended a compact on the podcast, so I guess it was fate. Anyway, I love crap, giggle, giggle, end, and I hope it continues for as long as you are as long as you are able. I also love the amiable banter, which makes the show fun and easy to listen to. We really don't mind hearing about Max or Nathan, so don't stop. So there you go. All right?
Cool.
In fact, it was great to hear about his win in that competition, even if it was a heathen cannon. If you are still uncomfortable... I like you, Mark. If you are still uncomfortable with him being a Canaanite, let me refer you to the story of Abraham and Isaac. I think you know what to do. Cast ye out the unclean Canaanite from among ye. One thing you must stop is referring to things as being fabulous. All right, I will, Mark. Thank you. Thank you for your fabulous email. I appreciate it. I will stop doing that. This term is okay for all male-only sea cruises or Barbra Streisand albums, but not a photographic podcast, which should exude rugged manliness. If not, then at least change Bruce's name to Iron Guts or Killer. You can imagine how I felt the first time I read it. As far as subjects for future podcasts are concerned, only one thing I enjoy hearing are the human elements in a topic, e.g. the Fuji S5 launch and the photographer's reactions to the new camera. So how about it, you say, tell us about your photographic journey and what it has meant to you and continues to mean to you. Fair enough. Bruce could weigh in as well, because he's more like most of us, a keen amateur. My point in all of this, enthusiasm begets enthusiasm. It has been Shutter Inc.'s strongest factor, and you are a gifted exponent. I say this not to flatter or patronize, but because it's true. I mean, a handsome sun-bronzed Anzac such as myself is hardly likely to suck up to a lightweight Canadian blow-in for nothing, eh? Encouragement is a gift from God, and you share it abundantly, so you deserve to have your life blessed, as we are blessed in your teaching. If you ever come to Perth, I hope we can meet. I'd like to buy you a coffee. We'll email again sometime after I recover from this one. It's taken hours with one finger. Warm regards, Mark Loader, Perth. So the coffee's on, Mark, if ever I'm
sensational.
In Perth.
Hey, Mark, I'm going to be over there in October of this year, so, matey, I'm expecting a coffee.
A beer, I would have thought. You cheapskate. He's a cheapskate. He likes his podcast for free, too, I'll bet. You know, coffee. Another one from Mark Hafner, and I thought this was interesting in line with our weddings. Yes, Shelton, yesterday I finished listening to your podcast about photographing the wedding ceremony. There is one tip I want to leave about the certificate signing. I was burned twice on this last summer, so now one of the odd things on my wedding checklist is a very nice pen. I couldn't believe it. The bride, or someone, spent hundreds of dollars on her dress, thousands of dollars to rent the facility, and who knows how much on what else. But they couldn't go to sign their certificate, and all they can find is an orange 29-cent pen that someone's chewed on. So now I know someone else should think of this, but obviously that doesn't always happen. So for $10, I can save the day, make my pictures nicer, and give the bride a thoughtful gift that she will always remember. What a nice idea.
Mm.
Buy a pen and take it as the pen that they signed the ceremony with, and leave it with them as a gift. That's a really nice idea.
That's a nice added touch.
Yeah, I've never come across that before. I've never encountered that problem before. So, you know, I hope that, you know, people consider that. It's a lovely idea. Very, very nice idea. So here's another one from David Fulton. And firstly, he says, I hope your wife is recuperating. Thank you, David. I know firsthand there is a nasty, persistent summer bug around. My interest was triggered. He says, I enjoy the crap, crap, giggle, giggle, etc. Crap, crap, giggle, giggle tip. My interest was triggered after a trip to Alaska in August 2006, never before out of Australia. Met by chance a professional and three of her friends at Katmai. Words can't describe Denali and Katmai. He goes on to a little bit more. Then he says, the point I am getting to is, if you have any suggestions about the avenues to further my photographic education experience beyond the confines of suburban clubs. Web groups such as Shutters Inc. and others are a start. Interaction, exchange of ideas is important. Booking for seminars have exposed me to differing points of view. Lastly, but not least, shooting often and exploring my camera. Am I on track so far with this strategy? Photoshop, printing, color management is another hurdle. A bit over a year post-Alaska and photography has changed my priorities. Today I met a group of enthusiastic people attached to the Melbourne Flickr site for a workshop at a bar in Beckett Street. So, well, that's what I would suggest you keep doing, Dave, and anybody who's in the same sort of thing. I think if you continue to expand your base of photographer friends, I would also suggest a lot of workshops. If I know that there are some that you can do for free that are offered as seminars and sponsored by companies, and then there are others, of course, that cost because they're run, you know, by photographers or their agents. I would try to do one of those as often as possible, because there's nothing like a hands-on workshop to really, you know, give you, probably teach you more in one day than you've learned in a year, and also just to sort of meet other people, you know, of like mind. So that I would definitely suggest you give a try. And finally, yes, Carlos Rivera, the I love you guys guy. Yeah, he says, my email is short and to the point because it's 1:48 a.m. at the moment. Bruce, thank you for putting together such a great podcast. In fact, the sound quality is better than some of the daytime radio shows that I hear, which is nice. Thank you, Carlos. I know putting a show of this caliber is not a simple task. However, I must say that other podcasts don't have anything on this one. I've tried to create my own video cast, and he gives us a link to take a look. Mm-hmm. Also, thank you for asking Shelton those spontaneous questions that keep him alert during the podcast. I didn't realize I was falling asleep, but, you know... Sometimes you ask him the exact question that I would ask of him, and the great thing about this interaction is that I get my answer in almost real time. Shelton, a few weeks ago I asked you for the names of Australian photographers whose wedding work you admired and respected. One of those names was Jerry Gionis. I must state that I am currently living the life of an artist, big dreams, but low on cash. However, I decided to bite the bullet and go to Vegas to WPPI. And learned that Jerry Gionis will be one of the speakers. I'm going to try and meet with him and let him know that you mentioned his name several times on the podcast. Maybe if you know him, you can put in a good word for me. Again, thank you for the heads up and for giving so much to our photographic community. Well, we really appreciate that, Carlos, and we thank you that you are enjoying yourself and benefiting from the podcast. I have met Jerry, but don't know him well personally. He might know my name, even as he knows as I know his, but his is bigger than mine. But by all means, say g'day and get a g'day back for me. All right, that would be terrific, Jerry. If you're listening to this podcast, Jerry Gionis, Gionis, I think is how it's spelled.
Yep,
is one of the leading Australian wedding photographers and a man of vision in terms not only of his photography but in terms of the photographic industry, wedding photography as an idea, and of course marketing, etc. The man is switched on, seriously. He's switched on visually, switched on in a business sense, switched on as a person. He's a man you can learn a lot from. So if there is a seminar near you and Jerry is speaking, just go to it. Just go, because you will come out of that changed. You really will. Jerry is just an incredible photographer. So, Carlos, by the time you get this, I presume you are going to have already been there. But I hope you've had a great time. I hope you met Jerry. I hope you came out from that seminar enthused, motivated, inspired, encouraged, and educated. Because I think you will. I really do. It won't be a waste of your money at all. At all. As I say, I think workshops of that caliber are excellent, and they do reveal a lot to you from, you know, a professional's perspective, with, you know, an interesting mindset and an interesting, you know, way of going about things. I was at the Photo Marketing Association meeting the other night, because I'm a member of the Photo Marketing Association here in Australia through Total Image, the magazine company that I publish with, and they were talking about the fact that of the recent PMA show in Las Vegas, many of whom from the Australian contingent went. I didn't go, but many here went, and they were basically saying some interesting things. And that is that when it comes to photographic retail, America has nothing to teach us. And in fact, we have much in Australia to teach the United States in terms of photo retail. It takes them apparently a fairly long time to implement new ideas. And Australians are known for being very quick to implement new technologies and new ideas. In fact, we are, as a culture, a bit of a guinea pig culture for a lot of new technologies. For some reason, Australian culture is known to be a very early adopting kind of culture. So if that follows through to our photography, then I think Australians have a lot to teach. And if an Australian photographer comes your way, Jerry Gionis, your Van Zanzanian, Martin Shembri, any of these fellows, Marcus Bell, even Shelton Muller, if I get across there, you know, that would be really nice. Then go and listen. If you can make out the accent, then go and listen. Because we are an interesting culture here in terms of how we market things. We're having a population of 20 million. We have to be smart. We can't rely on volume. We have to be smart. And I think that's taught us a lot of interesting things. We have, you know, the United States, a similar-sized country with, you know, 280-odd million people, or whatever the population is now. And so you can rely on volume to a large degree, but we can't here. So we've had to learn to be smart. If the things that we implement as photographers and as photo retail here were implemented in the United States, I think it'd... It'd be very, very successful. But things that he said that they had seen last year were still not implemented this year in the United States, and we implemented them within months here and had them up and running, you know, such as printing, you know, facilities and all those kinds of things that they were still working to get, you know, hold of over there. So I thought that was rather interesting, and it does follow through to our photographic culture. So not that I'm pushing any particular nationality or culture one above the other, but we benefit from learning from each other's cultures. You know, we've learned a lot from the American culture, but we have a lot to teach, you know, vice versa also, I think. But anyway, that's our emails for the week.
Cool.
We can perhaps continue on to just a little bit more about post-ceremony wedding photography. It's been an interesting segment because we've had a lot of, or an interesting subject because we've had a lot of correspondence, you know, and a lot of interest. I think we've had probably the correspondence we have received represents a small percentage of the actual interest that this has, you know, fomented in our listeners in terms of wedding photography. I'll be running a wedding photography workshop, hopefully in April here in Australia, in Melbourne, and I've said to, you know, the people who are marketing it for me, market it as a workshop for people who want to, you know, make money with their camera. And the reason I suggested that is because wedding photography frightens a lot of people. In speaking with university students, as I did, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, the fear for them was, you know, what if I muck it up? So it's a frightening thing. So from that perspective, maybe it wouldn't be a well-attended workshop because people would think, oh, it's something I could never do. But if they understand that, hang on, maybe I can do it, and there's a way of me making a little bit of money back for the expenditure of my equipment, you know, the money that I've spent, then it's worth talking about. The moment you mention, you know, the opportunity to make some money from your cameras, you know, from your photography, always people's ears go up. and fair enough too. I mean, it interests me. Of course it interests me. So I think that perhaps this particular segment has been of interest on both levels, because it is something that people aspire to do, and it is a means by which you can actually make some money. The domestic market is always open and ready to photographers. In the United States, I have heard that one of the biggest growing small businesses is domestic photography in terms of, you know, housewives particularly. There are so many housewives who now have, say, bought themselves a DSLR, and they're offering photography to friends and extended friends, friends of friends of their children. Because they've bought a DSLR, they've got a little bit of a skill, perhaps better than others, and a little bit of Photoshop skill, and they're able to do this. Now, I have a friend, Jody, who has done exactly the same thing. Her understanding of the technicalities of photography leaves a lot to be desired, but she has an incredible eye. And she is able to take her D200 and photograph. She does pregnancy photographs. Now, that's a big, big business. Mm. I mean, that is something that women particularly could take up and make a really, really nice little, you know, side income, or, you know, part-time income from. A full-time income if you can do it successfully. And they also do child portraiture and that kind of thing, because they have the camera and a little bit of expertise. And apparently in the United States, and I would say it would start to be happening here too, it is one of the largest growing, you know, sort of home businesses in the country. And so here's my point, that if there's a chance to make some money from your photography, wedding photography being part of that domestic market, people are going to be interested. So that is, you know, if you want to talk more about that on this podcast, you know, let's certainly do it. If you want to know about how to market yourself in terms of, you know, these kinds of photography, then let's talk about that. If the idea of making a little bit of money from your photography interests you, we can leave the technicalities behind for a little while, and we can talk about ways by which you can earn a little bit of your money back, or maybe a lot of money back. I get, you know, hints of that in emails.
Money for toys.
Money for toys, yeah, or money from toys, even better.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have the toys, now let's make some money with them. That's what we all want to do. So if that subject interests you, let us know. But I get the feeling that perhaps that is why this particular subject has been so popular. So we've talked about everything, and I thought I'd just talk a little bit more about post-ceremony photography. Now, you recently did a wedding, Bruce.
Yep.
Was that the scariest part of the wedding for you?
You know what? I would say the scariest part of the wedding was probably, I don't think it was actually any part of the taking of the photos so much as just trying to manage the flow of people in and out of, you know, setting up shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't feel like I had enough experience at sort of, you know, directing, you know, and just calling together groups of people and that sort of thing. Where once Dan and Kate and I just went off to do stuff, because they didn't have a bridal party as such.
Mm-hmm. Which can be a scary thing.
Yeah.
You've only got two people to work with. You know,
well, I actually found
come
it
up
quite,
with new ideas.
I actually found it okay because, I mean, I've known Dan and Kate for years anyway, so I actually found that part of it really easy, you know, just going off. Because I'd already, you know, I'd scouted out the location a week in advance, and so I sort of already had ideas in my head of things I wanted to do. But yeah, the actual, the mingling of people and just trying to organise, you know, different family members and all that sort of thing, I found that to be the toughest part of it all.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess everyone's different.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. I must admit, one of the things that scares me is what you were saying is when the bridal, when the couple, when you're interviewing them, you know, when they say, oh, look, it's only the two of us. We have no bridal party and we've left 4 hours for photography. And you're like, what am I going to do for 4 hours? You know, and so I suddenly suggest long picnics, you know, because it is hard when you're only working with two people to come up with a whole bunch of new ideas. And you really, you're, especially if you've only got one location, but you know, you work through it. But that is possibly, it's the part of the photography, as I've said, that the couple looks most forward to in terms of what they will receive. And it's also possibly the one that, you know, scares photographers the most because, you know, they have to get this part of it really, really right. So let's just talk about a few more things that we can, you know, make sure that we get right. What you should have is at least a mental list of photographs that you have to take. And, you know, if not a written list that you can refer to, try and refer to it surreptitiously when you're in the car or whatever, but don't have a list that you look at in front of the bride and groom. Okay, we're up to photo number 37 now. Photo number 37 is bride leans against groom who is posing against tree. 3/4. You know, you don't want to do that. But you do have to have some idea of what you have and haven't achieved so far. Essentially, from this particular photo session, you will want a bridal group, you'll want a formal bridal party photograph. Then you'll want a relatively informal bridal party photograph. Now, that informal bridal party photograph should be, well, not quite so posy. I don't like putting people in straight lines anyway. I will sort of give them a little bit of a semicircle and alternate them a little bit. Often what I do with the bridal party photograph is I have the bride and groom separate and the bridal party in a little bit of a casual semicircle, boy-girl kind of thing, a few feet behind. And then from there I can direct them to do different things. For instance, they can look at the camera, they can look at the bride and groom can, you know, embrace while the others, you know, look on, they can share a bit of a joke together. Then from there, you know, you can move the groups, you can alternate them, you can have them walk toward camera. There's a few different ways that you can represent the bridal party, but remember the bridal party is very important to the bride and groom, and they're their closest friends, and hopefully those friendships will extend on into the years ahead, and they'll all be at each other's weddings in years to come. So photographs of the bridal party are essential, and you should try and get those done fairly quickly, because the bridal party tires, or they get, you know, and if there's children in the bridal party, they'll maybe be taken away by parents to rest before the reception, or off to babysitters and that kind of thing. So try and get that done. And of course, there's always the fun shots. You know, what you come up with in terms of fun shots to try and create some fun and spontaneity in the bridal party group is good. But by this time, you should have already picked out the joker in the bridal party. Usually, there's a joker. Now, it could be one of the bridesmaids, it could be one of the groomsmen, or perhaps on the other end of that scale, who's the quiet one? who's the shy one, and you get them to be the center of attention. All right, you know, Jennifer is now, she's going to be telling a joke. I want you all to walk to camera while she tells a joke. And suddenly Jennifer's on the spot. She doesn't know what to do. And so everybody's just laughing at the fact that she's completely flummoxed. But if you, you know, so either way, work the group according to their personalities and create some spontaneity. With the girls, I like to sort of get a shot where they all get their heads really, really close together. In fact, cheek to cheek. And, you know, and then just tighten them up, get the bouquets right in front of the lens, faces together, a nice sort of tight shot that's fairly straightforward. The guys, you can do all sorts of funny faces and stupid things with them. Get the guys and the girls to interact. You can do James Bond type shots. There's all sorts of fun, you know, kitschy things you can do. As long as you're having fun, even if the photographs aren't masterpieces, that fun aspect of the post-ceremony shoot is very important for their memories.
Quite often, the boys will introduce some aspect or hobby of the groom, you know, like I've seen weddings where they, you know, they've brought their surfboards along and then, silly stuff like that.
Yes.
You know, or a Harley Davidson is there and there's shots around that, and that sort of just adds some texture to the photos.
Now, have I mentioned the boxer shorts shot?
No.
Here's a classic.
Do we need to go there?
Well, the boxer's shot is really cool.
Okay.
If the groomsmen are wearing matching boxer shorts, right. Then the pants down shot is a must. You know, I remember I was best man at a wedding, and that we had the matching boxers on, and it was just a, you know, here's the shot. And of course, you know, here's the shot. We all just stood there in matching boxers. We did a bit of a macho pose. So you could even suggest that to the groom. That he can tell his, you know, he goes out and he buys four sets of matching boxer shorts, and that's what they all have to wear in the day. Fun shot. You don't want to do that with the girls, of course, but to the guys, that's no problem. But, you know, fun stuff like that. Come up with your own and just, you know, a few options, a few variations that will work with different kinds of people so that you've got your signature fun shot. In the 80s and 90s in Australia, every photographer and his dog was doing the Oh What a Feeling Toyota ad shot.
Yeah.
You know, where everybody just sort of jumps into the air at the same time, you know. And, but I mean, that became a bit sort of everybody did it. Come up with your own if you can, and something that makes the girls and guys laugh. That's a very important shot, because the bridal party is very, very important. And then, of course, once the bridal party is done as a group, make sure that you get a separate individual portrait of each member of the bridal party. What I do here is I set my camera up on a tripod in one particular setting that will be good for both the boys and the girls, and I do single individual portraits of every member of the bridal party. It can be done very quickly. You've got your camera set up, the light is nice, all they need to do is just come into that zone, pose them the way you want to. I usually like to use a tree or a wall, something like that. I'll get the blokes to, you know, put their back against the tree or the wall and just sort of pose with a bit of a crossed arm looking over their shoulder down at the camera. The girls can stand nicely with a bouquet. It's just a perfunctory portrait. They should be nice. They should be well posed and well lit, and they should have, you know, nice bouquet and all those other things. Notice how I said bouquet. And all those other things. And so, you know, but that's the shot you want to get. So now you're over and done with the bridal party. You can then really start concentrating on the bride and groom. Now, similar things, of course, here, that you need the bride and groom together separately. They should be also have some fun shots and some serious shots. In terms of the fun shots, you can create all sorts of opportunities for the bride and groom. But if you are an insightful person, you can understand their dynamics and you can watch their relationship. Some couples are very serious. Some couples are just joke around couples who just love to, you know, the couples love to fool around, have a giggle. Use those aspects of their personal dynamics to create, you know, photographs. If one is outgoing and the other one is shy, use that dynamic so that you've got some tension created there, some fun. Use the shy groom and the outgoing bride as an opportunity to create, you know, some discomfort, even, you know, embarrassment, whatever. They make great photographs. Think about ways on the spot that you can create those moments. And then, of course, make sure that when they are created, you've put the bride and groom where? In the light. you know, before you do anything, find the light and put them in it, and then create the opportunities. That sort of directed spontaneity is what was recently referred to in an article about me. directed or contrived spontaneity. It is contrived, but it is spontaneous. You've basically got a situation, you've got a powder keg, you've lit the fuse, and you've set it all up, and off it goes. So whatever, how it explodes is, you don't know, but you've lit the fuse, you've set it up, it's ready to go. What happens? Well, that's the part that's spontaneous. But if you can, maybe get a secret tickle, you know, tell the groom to tickle the bride, then she doesn't know. While he's giving her a kiss or a cuddle, tell him to bite her on the neck, to do all sorts of things. Get those sorts of shots. They're very, very important photographs. And, of course, a lot will depend on the bride and groom's personalities and their personal dynamics. But those kinds of things, get over and done with, get them done while they're still fresh. And then, of course, also work on the very lovey-dovey romantic images. But here's the thing. Understand that the worst possible image you can create is some ridiculously contrived, overblown romantic image. I have seen photographs of grooms on knees in front of brides. Hang on, didn't he do that, a long time ago with a ring in his hand? I mean, what's the point? Real huggy shots, where they've got the bride and the groom to hug, and they've put them in front of a tree or put them in front of a floral bed or something. It's just unimaginative. The pose is contrived. The pose is overblown. Keep things light. Keep the... if you're going to get them intense, make sure it's real intensity. Make sure it's a real bite on the neck. Make sure it's but watch kissing shots, because when a couple kiss, if they get carried away, it's not photogenic, because there's, you can't see faces, so direct your kissing shots to be light, intimate. In fact, what I often do is just get the couple to match their noses or foreheads together and just sort of talk to one another and then just tighten up real tight, or just light kisses on cheeks, light kisses on foreheads, light kisses on necks, and then just circle them and just say, just do that for a minute, pretend I'm not here, and then keep it light, tell them to keep it light, and then you may even get a laugh out of it. You'll also get some very romantic, very real looking interactive photographs, but just tell them to keep it light. Heavy hugging, heavy kissing, heavy cuddling looks very
awkward.
Clumsy? Awkward, that's the word I'm looking for. Arms are in the wrong place. Nose is in the wrong place. Faces on the wrong angles. So set it up so that they very lightly interact. If it's a hug, then it should be maybe instead of arms around, arms on waists, arms on hips, or just lightly around the back of each other. Try and pose the couple so that you actually have them at an angle to each other, facing the camera, so you can see a little bit of the front of her dress, the little bit of the front of his suit, rather than, pressed together firmly, with only their profile of their body and face. Try and just sort of angle them that way so that it's kept light and just is photographically pleasing, while also trying to look real in terms of what they're actually or how they're actually interacting. Posing is a very, very important part of this process of the wedding photography, and if you aren't sure of how to do the poses, how to set them up, my suggestion would be that you just start, get yourself a little 6x4 postcard size plastic flip album from your local store, and you cut out photographs, or you print photographs that you've taken that inspire you, that you really liked, or you go and get your wedding photo book, your bridal book or anything like that, and cut out photographs that are poses that you like and have them there. You can put this little book in your pocket. I've used one. I don't use it anymore, but I remember in my early days taking one of these along with me, and it had images of poses that I really liked. And I thought, I won't remember that, but if I've got this on me, I can just quickly, pull it out of my gadget bag, surreptitiously have a flick through. Now, what was that pose again? Oh, yeah. Now, you won't do it exactly the same, but you'll be inspired by it. It won't turn out exactly the same because the couple you're dealing with is completely different. Their personal dynamics are different. The way they stand, the way they pose, the way they interact. Their physicality is different. But you've got a starting point. One of the biggest problems in wedding photography that I've seen in bad wedding photography is posing. So if you take the advantage of the ideas that we've talked about today, but also just carry a little inspiration book with you that you can just, you know, flip through and have photographs from every aspect of the wedding day: pre-ceremony, ceremony, post-ceremony, group shots, you know, fun shots. Have something, have 20, 30, 40 examples in there, and you just need to very quickly flick through them. You go, oh yeah, I must try that, or I'll slightly adapt that, you know, because it'll be a different situation. I'll just work with that. Trust me, it's a big help. When you're on the day, your brain is working on so many things. Normally, in a very long, drawn-out situation, you've got the time to work it, and you've got the time to get the image processed, you know, and work through. But on a wedding, you don't have that kind of time. You've got to be Johnny on the spot. You've got to get those shots, get them done, finished, and move on. So sometimes when you're a little tired and your brain's not working, a little bit of inspiration does not go astray. And finally, as I say often and say again, there is nothing more important to me anyway, in my style of photography, than the philosophy of find the light and put them in it. I really mean that. If you're in a garden, don't pull them into the broad daylight in front of a bunch of flowers. That is just boring. It is done time and time and time and time again. The flowers are not important. Flowers are beautiful, flowers are nice, but they are flowers. We have a bride and groom here. They are the subject. I prefer to get the bride and groom under a tree and find where the light is coming down through the tree as a patch of light on the ground. That will be the place where I will say to the bride, stand there. It doesn't matter where it is under that tree. If there's a patch of light, I will get the bride to stand in it. And then I underexpose a stop or two, and I just watch in my shot as the bride glows in rim light from this shaft of light beneath the tree.
You know, there are two things that you have said over the course of the last 107 episodes which have really stuck in my head. And one I've mentioned already, which is, you know, your mantra of find the light and put them in it, which I absolutely live by. And the other thing that I also have really latched onto is it was almost just a passing comment that you said one time about just because it's a beautiful scene doesn't make it a beautiful photograph.
No, that's right.
And those two things have really stuck with me.
I'm glad.
And, you know, put together, it sort of brings it all, I don't know, it just seems to, certainly for me, just crash in on my consciousness when I'm setting up a shot. It's like, well, yes, the subject might be great, but that doesn't necessarily make a great photograph. Mm-hmm. And then bearing in mind, you know, what's the light doing and how can we manipulate it to best advantage?
Yes. Thank you, mate. I appreciate that. To me, if you can remember those two principles, you wrap up a wedding. I mean, if you apply those two principles to every aspect of the day, you've won. You are a winner. Because you don't have to think about anything. You just find the light, put them in it, and then just your basic principles of posing, composition, and exposure, which, if you're shooting a wedding, you should know, will apply. And you've won. There's, you know, that is the mantra, as you say, that I take with me on every shoot, but especially a wedding. Find the light and put them in it. A shaft of light under a tree is a magical place for a bride in a white dress. I'll send some images through, actually.
Okay.
Recently, I photographed a wedding of a young Sandra Bullock lookalike. And, we were just walking back to the car after doing a photo session in a place where they wanted to be photographed. And I saw, what did I see? I saw a shaft of light underneath a tree. And I said, oh, can we stop for just a minute? And they said, what for? There's nothing here. And I said, oh, there's something here, all right. And I got Nicole to stand underneath the tree, and just all the bridal party standing next to me, you know, as I'm setting up this shot, they're sort of standing as an audience as we set this up. And then suddenly they went, oh, look at that. And because people don't see light like photographers do, they didn't really understand what was happening until I pointed it out, and I said, you know, all you need is one shaft of light. And they said, oh, yeah, look at that, you know. And the photographs, they're among my favorite from the wedding. And we just worked. First of all, I put Nicole there on her own, full length, three-quarter, head and shoulders. Then I got Luke, got him in the shot, just a little bit behind her, and then posing with her, full length, three-quarters, head and shoulders. And that was it. We wrapped it up, and was very quick, very done, but I won. You know, I got a shot that they will love simply because that rim light romantic bridal veil, bridal dress shot is the winner. And if you do those over and over again, away you go. And the other thing is, and Richard Annibal will testify to this because he's having fun, is the off-camera flash. If you can get, if you can set up a system with a couple of flashes and some remote triggers, do it. Do it, because what you can do with flash these days, and we should really explore that, is just fantastic. And so if you haven't got the light to find to put them in it, then you make it with your flash. And there are so many ways that that can be done. I have simulated sunlight in so many ways on a wedding with off-camera flash. It's just been my savior. I had a display at a wedding expo down here at a golf club where I'm their photographer of choice, and I had to do a photograph of a bride on the premises. We had this one evening where they needed this shot done for their brochure, so we got a girl, we put her in a wedding dress, but the evening was terrible, and I think I've actually talked about this several podcasts ago. And I just used as Graham Anderson, hello Graham, by the way, so wonderfully puts it, he calls it his sunshine kit, his off-camera flash with orange cellophane. And when I printed this picture up to about 3 foot by 4 foot or something, and put it on the wall, and I explained it to the staff there, because they work where this photo was taken. I said, that's not even sunlight, that's flash. And they couldn't believe it, you know, that she was bathed in this warm glow of the setting sun. And it wasn't, because it was all gray, cloudy, overcast day that day. If you can master flash so that it is the light that you can put them in it, then you've got another serious advantage up your sleeve for that post-ceremony, or any part of the wedding day for that matter, photography. So there's if you need to talk about this some more, you've got a week to email me, and we can talk about that between now and the next podcast. But I also mentioned last podcast of a company who does fantastic wedding album services, both design and wedding packaging. They put together, they will design, print, and bind your photographs into a wedding album. And so the website is, the company is called Susan Pro, S-U-S-A-N Pro, P-R-O, one word, Susan Pro. It's susanpro.com. They are apparently an Indonesian company. I'm not sure whether they service the United States yet, but I know they do service the Australian market. And my friends who have worked with them very closely have found them to be second to none in terms of the service they provide for wedding album binding. They will also, if you're not the kind of person who wants to design the album, they have designers standing by at excellent rates, apparently, to take all that burden off of you. So they design it, they bind it, they put it together, they send it back to you. In fact, all you need to do is send them a disc of your images and a list of the chronological order in which you want them designed. They will do everything for you and send it back. So it's a very, very good service. SusanPro.com is the album company, and they've been excellent for my friends. I don't do a lot of wedding albums due to the nature of the service that I provide, but I know for my friend Greg Bayer, who's used them, he's just had a wonderful time working with them. So that's just the company I mentioned last week. Give them a try, see what you come up with.
Absolutely.
All right.
I want to just very quickly say, well done, Richard Annibal, with your Beatles series of self-portraits. They're really clever.
Yeah, they're absolutely wonderful, you know.
Have you been watching them, mate?
I have, although I didn't, as I said to Richard, I didn't know there was a Beatles song called Off Camera Flash. which, have you seen that picture?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's dedicated it to me. I mean, you know you're famous. You know you're famous when people are dedicating photographs to you. But I don't remember that one being on the White Album or Abbey Road or anything, you know.
Yeah, off-camera flash, yeah. Yeah. Don't ask me, I'm only the drummer.
No. One other thing that I want to mention.
Yes, Paul, go on, what are you going to say?
Since we spoke last week, it has been confirmed for me that I'm going to be heading back to the US in about 4 weeks' time. I will be recording in Ventura for a week and then heading out to Las Vegas for NAB, which is the National Association of Broadcasters trade show, which is like the biggest video audio and broadcast trade show in the world. It is absolutely enormous. I'm really looking forward to that. And then heading back to Ventura for another week of work. So that will mean that there will probably be a 3 to 4 week break in Shutters Inc. over the course of the month of April.
Right.
So I just wanted to advise people up front to expect that. And, of course, if any of our listeners are out in the Vegas area, then, you know, be more than keen to hook up while I'm out there. I'll certainly be out there for at least 4 days, possibly five. So,
wow.
Yeah, if anyone's out in that area.
You behave yourself in Vegas, young man. That's a toddling town at Vegas.
Matey, I just watched Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas only a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
I don't think I want that kind of trip.
Okay, no, fair enough. You behave yourself, young man. Vegas with the you know, the feathered ladies and the gambling and the whole bit. You behave yourself, young man. So if you are listening and you live near that area, you know, please just supervise Bruce and his activities. He is an Aussie on the loose, and you know, you never let an Aussie on the loose. Never, never, never.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And of course, don't forget the week after next. Next week we'll do a podcast. Week after next, I'm on Kangaroo Island, so that'll be another one we'll miss, folks. But hopefully, we'll be able to also announce next week where and when you'll be able to access our video tutorials that I'm launching, the website that I'm launching with regard to that. We will have that up and running very, very soon. So we're hoping that you all become members, and I'll be able to buy my first Lamborghini.
Fantastic.
I'd never buy a Lamborghini.
Wouldn't you?
No. Not that I have a problem with Lamborghini. It's just that I'd never spend that kind of money on a car.
Really?
You know? No. I'm sorry. I've passed the middle age crisis.
When I was younger, I always wanted a Lamborghini Countach. And then when the Diablo came out, I thought, yeah, Diablo, yep, they're nice. And then the Murcielago came out. But these days, you know, kind of, you know, approaching 40, I'm thinking, if I had the money, Aston Martin DBS.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm just not a car kind of guy.
Really?
You know, I'd spend my money on a 1962 cherry red Fender Strat with a Fender twin reverb amp, or you know, or maybe one of those really beautiful $40,000 Hasselblads with the digital back.
Right.
You know, I'd spend my money on a lot of travel. That's what I would do. But you know, cars, I'm happy with my Mitsubishi. You know, to be honest with you, it's fine. Even though they made the planes that bombed Australia, I don't care. You know. Fine, nice car. Does me fine.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very much for all of that.
And my pleasure. No worries. Good to talk to you, mate.
Absolutely.
And, keep us informed, gang. It's so nice to get your correspondence. And, you know, if you haven't emailed in a little while, and I'm thinking of a few people we haven't spoken of, love to hear from you. It really would be lovely to hear from you if you haven't emailed. I'd just like to know that you're still listening. All right? That's all I'm going to say.
Definitely. All right. Until next week. Take care.
Yeah, good on you, Bruce.
See you, mate.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.